Hi, friends. Welcome to the Worship Circle Podcast. My name's Todd Fields, and we've been doing this for quite a while now, and we're always grateful that you would click on the link to listen and go on this journey with us, where we want you to know that you are loved and not alone wherever you serve in ministry. Our ministry is called Worship Circle, and I'm just so excited about what we have coming up. Also excited about where we've been. We just finished our 2025 term, and we had a final benediction session. We do this every year, and we give all of our mentors like just a brief 3 to 4 minute window to share kind of their one thing they want to leave everybody with. And guys, it's just always impactful to know that God's kingdom is connected, and we can be connected when we're intentional about doing something for ourselves, where we step out of the boat of what's known into the unknown and the mystery of what God might do, and go on a journey just to follow him in knowing ourselves well, knowing him well, and being present to the present moment and to his presence. So that's what we're all about, and it's really where we're headed next year. The ways you can engage, we've got two awesome ways coming up. Rest Retreat is right around the corner, October 20 to 22. It's in Georgia, here in wonderful Georgia, the best place in the world. I think I grew up here, I'm partial. But I love everywhere else too, though. But the seasons here are amazing. Fall is upon us. It's going to be hopefully a lot cooler than it is now. And we're going to have fun out at Stone Mountain by the water, worshiping and just having some really good food and conversation. But worshipcircle.com/rest. We still have a few spots available. If you are hearing this now for the first time and you haven't seen all our social media posts and you want to get in on that, we'd love to have you. There's still time. We will be there for you. We will welcome you, and we'll just, man, it'll be an honor just to know your name, know where you're from, and walk around the area by the water with you, give you some time to be filled up by God, just to be still from all the doing that maybe you're a part of right now. The second thing, which is really where we're all headed in 2026, our January kickoff is in the middle of the month, and it's a 10-month term. You guys, we call it the journey. And to apply to be, see if you could be accepted, our team will reach out on a Zoom call with you. We just really want to connect with you and find out how you're doing, hear a little bit more about you. We've got team members ready to do that. worshipcircle.com/the journey. So you pick your mentor, decide whose small group you want to be in. Some of the groups are almost full. Others are about half full. So we've still got plenty of time before the end of the year for you to get in. But you get in now and you apply, and you'll get the spot and the mentor that you might want. I'm really excited about this podcast because as a ministry, we really haven't delved into some of these issues that I think we all have struggled with or are struggling with, especially in ministry. We're expected to be perfect. We're expected to have figured life out and not have any problems. And as I know personally, and just with my life, with doing this ministry with worship leaders through the years, like, we all have struggles in our private life. And that's really what this episode's about. I met Greg Oliver at Andy Gullihorn's house, and I met Andy because I needed help. I went out to a men's retreat with Michael Cusick in Colorado, and that's where I met Andy Gullihorn. And God's just surrounded me with some really good men to say, you know, hey, man, we're with you in the struggles of what it's like to be a man on the earth here right now with all the stuff that's thrown at us, and what's that all about, and how do you be free from things that you don't want to carry in this life. And that's what this episode's about. Greg Oliver runs a ministry called Awaken Ministries. I met him at Andy's house, and we were just talking the past couple of years, hit it off, and I was on his podcast, and then he's actually going to be at the Rest Retreat with us to meet some of you guys. But the idea, and we'll talk about it, I can't wait for you to hear this conversation, is that, you know, Carrie Garcia, one of our friends that's partnering with us, especially next year, we're going to be doing Freedom Academy for a Worship Circle, and all our coaches are going to go through it in Nashville in January. It's going to be amazing. But she has this saying that I believe, it's like, we're all addicted to something. And I think sometimes we categorize addiction, you know, well, this addiction isn't as bad as that addiction. But the reality with addiction, whether it's an addiction to ministry and having to be on a stage and not being able to press stop, or addicted to binge watching stuff and dissociating, or alcoholism or pornography, whatever our struggle at times seems to be, the point of this episode and why I'm so excited about it is the more I've gone on this journey myself, I realize it's really not as much about the addiction as it is about the good desire to gone wrong. And so I can't wait for Greg to shine some light on that and just offer us all some helps. He's got a podcast called What We Really Want. And I love that phrase because deep down inside, I think all of us want life. We want freedom and we want healing. And somewhere along the way, whether it's in a bad relationship or hanging out with the wrong crowd or, you know, making the wrong decision for a night, whatever it is, we make choices because we have good desires. We just misplace them. And the good news is Jesus is a redeemer and he can redeem everything and anything. And he does. And that's why we exist as a ministry, because if there wasn't redemption for us, there would be no hope for us to be able to do anything. But God's in the process of healing people who are addicts. We all are to something, as I said. And so that's what this is about. We're all going to kind of dive into this together. And I just want you to know, if you're listening to this and you're struggling in any of these areas we mentioned, just welcome to being human. Welcome to the opportunity to be free, honestly. And you're going to find that freedom definitely comes through community. And so that's one of the reasons we do this ministry, is because it's really hard to find a safe place to show up as you are and say, me too, or I need help. And the sooner we do that, the more amazing and joy-filled life can become. And we go to war against the enemy as a brothers and sisters. It's really, we can deal them a mighty blow when we do that. So enough of my ranting. I just wanted to set this up from my heart because I care about you guys and I've walked this path personally and found freedom and healing and life. And I want that for everybody listening. And it's important, I think, to say one more time that, you know, I think for some of us, we really are addicted to things that we don't think are as bad, but they eat our soul alive. You know, we stay busy all the time. We got to preach every Sunday. We have to lead every Sunday, whatever it is. Let's just ask God to shine a light on the dark places of our life, the places that are hurting, and maybe give us insight into the things that we really desire that are good, what we really want. So it's my honor and privilege to introduce my friend, Greg Oliver. I hope you enjoy this conversation, and I hope you get something really helpful for your life out of it. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Worship Circle podcast. I have a friend who, Greg, I think we've been in the same circles for years, but I met you in Andy Gullihorn's backyard at his birthday bash that he does every year, right?
Yeah. Watching old dried up Christmas trees shoot flames about 40 feet into the air.
Well, Andy's been a source of so many good relational connections for me in light of my story and what I've gone through and where I'm at now. And so Andy is our mutual friend, but we've also got some other mutual friends, David Peacock.
Yeah. Once we got to know each other, we've found at least four or five others.
Yeah. Pete and Whitney Bradburn. Like there's so many, it's crazy in the kingdom. You find out we really are all brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm. And you and I are also old enough to where that's not totally surprising. We've intersected with a lot of the same people.
Well, Greg, we're going to delve into, I feel like as a ministry, and you know, we've been doing this over a decade now, and so much of our focus has been on our story. We've recently been really focusing on how our story impacts our present, you know, our family of origin story. And we've had some dear friends come on and shepherd us with that. We've paid attention to soul care, to spiritual discipline somewhat in our term. And we want to help worship leaders know they're loved and not alone, and pastors. And you and I, you know, I don't know that we signed up years ago to say, hey, I'm going to be on this track where because of my brokenness, God might use that to help other people. And so I feel like this episode is really like you and I are kind of going to war and maybe wanting to shine a light on shame, shine a light on taboo, shine a light on the hidden and the secret. And really for our hearts, because, you know, you guys listen to Greg and I talk beforehand, we just want you to know that you are not alone no matter what is going on in your life right now in the hidden. So,
you know, Todd, with what you said a minute ago, I think that I probably would have said, that I was wanting to sign up for what you just described,
right,
you know, that my story would help others. But I had no idea that the particular story that he was going to use. I mean, I didn't have a clue.
Yeah, so. It's almost as if, man, and it's crazy because this is just going to be a great conversation, but it's almost as if I think we set out, especially for those of us that grow in the church, up in the church, like, man, I want to get it right.
Right.
And I want my story to be that I made all the wise decisions, I chose the right path, and look, God was with me the whole time, and I want that kind of testimony.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, for everyone, pretty much, we find that we've been harmed. We find that there's the evil tried to come after us at a pretty young age and mess with us.
Yep.
And so, Greg and I are going for it today, just talking about some of our struggles. We're going to say it out loud and go through it, so those of you listening can know that, man, we're not alone in this journey on earth.
Yeah.
We believe in a king that holds all together, and he's got good things for us. But here we are. So, man, let's just start out. I'd love for you to share your story if you're comfortable doing that. I know you have before in podcasts or with your ministry with Awaken, and we'll talk more about what you guys do in Birmingham down the line after this conversation. But, man, talk about just in a nutshell, you kind of your background, what happened, and how you got into this work, you know?
Yeah, so I'll start with a real high level, and then I'll drill down a little bit. I'll try not to take too much time with it, but I am 55 years old, went to Bible college here in Birmingham, Alabama, met a beautiful missionary kid who had grown up in West Africa. We got married in 1992, and I was training to go into ministry as a worship pastor, which I did for about 15 years. And that came to an abrupt stop at the beginning of 2009, because what was going on in my life on a parallel track with the ministry and all the public stuff was a secret sexual addiction that I carried that nobody except for God and I knew about.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that, sadly, I was able to keep a lid on for way too long.
Yeah.
But God blew it up right at the beginning of 2009. And that's when I lost a lot. I lost my job, lost a lot of the people that I had relationship with, was at risk of losing my marriage and my family. And yet God would have been good if I had lost my family, because that's what I deserved because of my actions. But God was gracious, and Stacy was gracious, and she stayed with me. And not only did we stay married, but we actually found the kind of marriage that we had always sort of knew that we wanted, but didn't know how to move toward, because now with the secret out and with addiction not having this hold over my life anymore, I was able to finally ask for help and get help and get into therapy and come to understand the origins and the contributors to my addiction. And just everything that had not made sense to me started to make sense. And so I was getting free and healthy and sober and just living kind of the life that I'd always told other people as somebody who's in ministry, I'd always offered to other people, but kind of felt like I was disqualified from because of the secret that I was holding.
Yeah.
And so I got into a recovery community and came to understand a whole lot about my story. I really wanted to get back into church ministry as a worship leader. And for several years, God didn't allow that. And I think because he was protecting me, because I had a real problem with performance and finding my identity in what I did.
Right.
And I think he protected me from getting into that or having it as an opportunity too quickly. Eventually, I did have a chance to do that. But by then, I had already felt like God was steering me in a different direction. And I actually said no to a church that offered me a job. And that was a real significant time for me, because it was showing me that God was working in my heart in such a way to where I could trust the direction that he was putting in front of me, rather than assuming a direction that it had to look like and just going full steam toward it.
Right.
And so that just showed a lot of the healing that he was doing. And so the desires that I had as somebody who loved people and loved ministry, and I'm an Enneagram 2, I'm a helper, I love to walk alongside people, it just got redirected from the kind of ministry I'd done into just so many conversations. By this point, you know, probably hundreds of conversations with other people walking through the same thing, and then that turned into what I do for a living now. 10 years ago, in the summer of 2015, Stacy and I started Awaken, and it's just a it's a nonprofit, gospel-based 12-step recovery ministry for people who are just like I was, sidelined mm-hmm. by sexual brokenness, but also we have a ministry to women who are the partners of men who struggle. We have recovery community for men and for women who struggle with unwanted sexual behavior. Most of the women in that community are single, but we also have a betrayal trauma community of women who have had, you know, partner betrayal trauma from their husband, their boyfriend, their fiance, some of them their ex-husband. They're not married anymore, but they still need to heal.
Yeah.
And it's crazy that it's been 10 years, but that's where we are. And we've seen, like, I don't know exactly how many people, but many hundreds of people. We've got 26 recovery meetings that happen every week all over the place. So it's wild.
I like that you say unwanted behavior, that phrase. Because, yeah. You know, I too have struggled with pornography off and on in my journey. And for many of us, I remember, you know, for other guys saying, man, that was my struggle too. Or when I finally found out there's something about being known and seen mm-hmm. in the midst of your struggle. That's like, man, I'm going to be okay. Cause I'm broken, but there's other people that are broken too.
Yes, and what is absolutely.
It, what is it about, you know, and for those of you listening, you may be female or male and struggle with this. Greg and I want to come at this and just, first of all, say you're loved, you're normal, you're not a misfit.
Yeah.
And, you know, our friend Carrie Garcia, who we've had on, and you've heard Kathy Lorzel and that whole team, our friends that are helping us with story work, would say we're all addicted to something.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, the hidden sexual stuff is just like that's the Mac Daddy Mount Everest addiction. And yet we've got people listening who struggle with alcoholism, mm-hmm. with video game addiction, with binge watching, you know, Netflix. And the craziest one that we accept is we're addicted to ministry.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like we need to be needed in ministry. We need to serve and we need to have that platform. And just talk about your experience with what's going on. There's so much shame around sexual addiction or sexual brokenness.
Sure.
And yet they're all behaviors that are unwanted. And at some point they're soothing escapism behaviors that we all adapt from our story of origin.
That's right. Well, and to start off, like the reason I call it unwanted, or usually I say unwanted or addictive sexual behavior,
right.
Not everybody who's a part of our community would say that they believe that they're a sex addict. And
right.
That's fine. You know, if you've struggled with this, if you've tried to control it or stop it on your own, you haven't been able to, then this is the place for you.
Yeah.
We don't care whether you've crossed
right.
that blurry line into addiction or not. But I think that to answer the question you just asked me, I think that the power of sexually struggling is particularly powerful for Christians who grew up in a church environment that almost never talked about sex at all.
Right.
And so just that, you know, I've heard a phrase, what is exotic becomes erotic.
Right.
And so like, oh, it's something we speak about in hushed tones. There must be something interesting there. But when we do talk about it in the church, it's usually just prohibitive. It's usually sex is dangerous, don't do it, it's going to blow up your life,
right.
Which of course, when you're young, is going to just make you even more curious. But then the third thing is I think that sex is something that God created to be just a culmination and a celebration of connection and intimacy between mm-hmm. a husband and a wife. And too often we reverse it. We try to use sex to get connection and intimacy, but it's
right.
supposed to come out of connection and intimacy. But wow, it's such a powerful counterfeit, you know?
Yeah.
And we got people who so often were sexualized at a young age, either by being exposed to pornography
mm-hmm.
involuntarily, being sexually abused by someone that they trusted, just being exposed to sexual things before they were ready. And then
right.
that turns in, because when you're a kid, you don't know what's going on and
yeah.
you discover things and you touch parts of your body and it feels good. And by the time you realize, like, I think this is more than just curiosity. I think I'm using this to try to meet some kind of a need. Well, you still probably don't have that language for it. And now your brain chemistry has kind of taken over and you've conditioned yourself to become dependent on the thing that you started doing.
Yeah.
And so there's just, I know that's a convoluted answer, but I think it's because there are so many things going on at the same time.
Yeah.
And I think that I think that our enemy knows that what our hearts most deeply desire is connection,
yeah,
to know and be known, to see and be seen, you know, like Kurt Thompson says, safe, seen, soothed, secure.
Yeah.
But there's a risk in doing that. And most of us, by the time we hit puberty, have learned about the risk because the closest relationships that we've had in our lives have come with pain and wounding. And so we learn how to try to take the safe way. And so whether that's pornography, masturbation, or just relationless sexual connections, it feels like it's doing the trick.
Right.
And then eventually it doesn't. And by the time it doesn't, we're usually trapped in it.
Man, that's good. How do we... So we've got people listening and they're like, hey, this has been my struggle, you know,
yep,
and I'm on a stage leading people to Jesus
before, yep,
and I've got a gift,
yep,
or I'm a pastor and I preach. But what do you do? Like, what's the pathway, you know, for someone listening to say, you know, there's two parts to this question, Greg, because they call it purity culture. We all grew up in this deal where, hey, if you put, mm-hmm, Kathy Lorzel talks about this, put the rubber band on your arm and you pop yourself, yeah, if you have a bad thought, you know, and you're trying to,
yeah,
do the straight and narrow. And there's this sense of which we just say, well, you're bad. Your sin reigns in your bones. It's evil. So just stay away. And that's your goal.
Mm.
But what you and I have talked about, and I know what you guys do at Awake and what Gullihorn and everybody and Michael Cusick and these friends we have, they talk about is, what if we were curious about what happened to us?
Yes.
Jay Stringer has a book called Unwanted. I love that book. It's the first, yep, time I heard somebody go, man, rather than being repulsed by something that's off in your life, that's a counterfeit,
mm-hmm,
what if you came after that counterfeit with curiosity? And you started wanting to know yourself well enough to go, what am I longing for?
Mm-hmm.
Which you said is intimacy and connection.
Yeah, but we don't get there because we're, I think, often presuming that the whatever it is I'm longing for is bad.
Yeah.
And there's not a chance, because what we've done out of that longing is something that we feel badly about.
Right.
And let's just go ahead and say a lot of times what we do is something we would call sin.
Yeah.
And it's not God's design. It's not God's, right, best. And we feel shame. We feel guilt about it, which can be helpful, but then we feel shame about it, which isn't helpful.
Right.
And the shame clouds our view so that we're not able to get down and get to that desire that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, you said, like, what do you do about it? I'll tell you what I used to do about it.
Yeah.
Is when I was neck deep in it, I would be acting out all through the week. And then, like, before Sunday, I would, like, legalistically pray, get it all cleared out, get, yeah, my heart right so I could get through Sunday. And then I'd just fall back into the cycle the next week. And,
right,
I would imagine there's probably people listening who are like, oh, that's what I do too. I mean, so many times just so that I could hold it together to get through either a band practice or a worship service, would just, like, desperately, like, God, please forgive me. I'm sorry. I won't do it again. Knowing full well I was going to do it again. But, like, there's the clearing that I had to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it was helpless. It was a helpless feeling because I knew full well that this was just a ritual that I was doing.
Yeah.
And what I do now that I've been, by the grace of God, walking in sobriety for 16 and a half years is I keep it out in the light.
Yeah.
And as you hear me saying that, it's like, that is the most terrifying concept imaginable,
yeah,
to somebody who hasn't brought it into the light yet. And I get it. Like,
yeah,
I have over the years experienced jealousy when I hear the stories of people who just couldn't live with it anymore and they, like, raise their hand and they said, hey, I need help. This is what's going on. That's not my story. And I can tell you with confidence, I don't believe that ever would have been my story.
Mm.
I had to get caught because I was terrified of what would happen. I was terrified of consequences, of ruining multiple lives. And like everything had to fall apart for me. Mm. And I hope that that conversations like this will be something that God uses to give people enough hope to say that maybe if I do raise my hand, it'll be okay. But I want to tell you that even if you don't, and even if your life does blow up like mine did, that's not the end. I mean, I'm sitting here talking to you, Todd, and it's funny because like you were somebody whose music back in the late 90s, early 2000s, like I would use as a model for how I wanted our band to sound. So it's like, it's really cool that we eventually met. But the price of admission is somebody has to know about it other than just you and God.
Yeah. The crazy thing though, man, is that it's such a scary thing to come clean and just say, hey, this is my struggle. I'm broken. I don't know how to fix this, and raise your hand and surrender.
Absolutely terrifying.
Terrifying. And yet,
because it could go really badly. Because I've talked to people that it did go really badly.
And you can't control that. You could lose your job, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You could have to be sidelined for a while. You have to go into recovery, show up at meetings. And it's like, man, that's a lot of work. Wouldn't it be easier just to not tell people this is my struggle, you know?
Well, yeah, for a while, it would be a lot easier because it has been. But the thing that I've said in conversations with people, I don't know how many times, and this is not something I came up with, this has been, you know, recovery language for decades, is people start to recover when it hurts more to stay where you are than what the discovery and the movement is going to bring into your life. There's no path forward that doesn't involve pain.
Yeah.
If you've gotten yourself caught, or you found yourself caught in an addiction, there is no exit of that is not going to involve pain.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of, do you like the way your life is right now?
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're experiencing the joy of your salvation? Do you feel like you're living the life that God created you to live? And if the answer is no, then, you know, what we try to tell people is that life is not over. You still get to have that life, but you don't get to have that life and secrecy at the same time, because that's not how we were meant to live, looking over our shoulders all the time.
Yeah. Golly, this is such a good conversation. What about, it's just any stories you have with the Waken, with work that you guys, without naming any names, what are some scenarios that you would say to somebody who's like, man, this is my struggle. What do I do, Greg? Where do I go? What's kind of a typical step toward freedom for people, just to take that first step, just to say, who do I go to? Is it, you know, just maybe share that with your experience of working with people.
Yeah. I mean, the first step that we offer to people is come to a meeting, because one of the first things you need is to feel what it feels like to be in a room or on a Zoom call, depending on where you live, with other people who will go first, who will tell their stories, and their stories will sound like your story. And, you know, like you say all the time, worship circle, you're loved and not alone. One of the first things that they realize at an Awaken meeting is that they're not alone. They're not sure if they're going to be loved yet, but at least they know that they're not alone. And so once they start hearing those stories, a lot of times newcomers will just kind of, you know, have that deep shoulder sigh, and they'll say, okay, well, let me share something. And we often say, or I often say, that a recovery meeting, one of the best things about it, it's a place for a person to practice telling the truth.
Yeah.
Because any kind of addictive struggle, in order to keep it going, you have to be dishonest. Like, you have to lie to yourself and to people that you love in your life in order to keep this addiction going. And so, like, I look back on my story, Todd, and so many times I would find myself lying about things that I didn't even need to lie about, because it had gotten so natural just to cover my tracks. And so coming to a recovery meeting is a time where people can just, oh yeah, I don't have to qualify that. I don't have to put asterisks on it. I can just say, yeah, I mean, like 2 days ago, I paid somebody for sex. And then the people in the room will say, thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
And that's all they'll say.
Yeah.
And they won't say, oh man, that's really bad. Yeah. Or gosh, you need to get out of here. You can't come back until you've got at least 6 months of not doing that. And, wow. And I'm not saying that there aren't legitimate consequences. And one of the reasons you need a recovery community is because if you're married, you can't reasonably expect your partner to have that kind of grace, right? Because she's the one or he's the one that's being absolutely betrayed every time you do something like that. But the people in the recovery meeting, we're not personally harmed by what you do. And we have the capacity to say, I get it. Me too. Maybe not exactly the same. Maybe in some ways that feel worse or not quite as extreme, but like we all get it. Mm-hmm. And when you can share something like that, I remember years ago, this guy coming in and on our check-in group saying, I almost didn't come because 20 minutes before the meeting started, I was sitting in my office at work masturbating to porn and just feeling like the biggest loser and just shame-ridden piece of garbage. And I sat in the parking lot trying to convince myself not to come in, but I just had to come in.
Yeah.
And he shared that, and we all, and he just looked around at the other guys who were in the check-in group, and none of us had said anything yet. And he just started crying because the looks that we were giving him were not shameful looks. They were just understanding, compassionate looks. And we're just like, man, we're so glad you came in. Gosh, we're so glad that you're here. Thank you for sharing. And that's not all that has to happen. I mean, we know that we've got to own our stuff, but that's the first thing that needs to happen is to realize that if this becomes known, my life isn't over.
Yeah.
I may lose some relationships, but I still can have some relationships.
Yeah.
You know, I may lose my job, but I can still have connection. And then, you know, after that, we encourage people, you know, to work the 12 steps, to put things in place in their lives that are going to encourage sobriety, you know, not for its own sake, but so that they'll have the capacity to go deeper into the origin work and the story work to discover how did it get this bad in the first place, to move towards a place of honesty in their important relationships. Because I don't want somebody to feel like I got a ministry job and I have to just perpetually keep this secret. I mean, eventually we want you to feel the freedom to bring it into the light and take what comes with it. But we don't like force people to do that from day one. Yeah. We allow them to kind of warm up to the concept of living in the light.
I love, I think it's in Hebrews where it says we have a high priest who's able to understand our weaknesses because he too is tempted.
Yeah.
Number two, I love Larry Crabb's statement, two words, of course.
Yep.
I had never heard that before, and a friend of mine shared that with me years ago, and it began to change everything for me, and I want our listeners to hear this idea. What if Jesus is sitting there going, my child, I understand.
Of course.
Of course. Because of, I know what you most want, and I know what you're dying for, you're starving for, and you've believed that this behavior or this alcohol or this preaching schedule is going to soothe the wound that you've had or the wounds that you've carried since you were a little boy or a little girl. And I have compassion on you. That whole idea was new for me, you know? Yeah. And for me, that was part of my road toward more freedom is just going, man, what if Jesus is with me in my weakest moments? Mm-hmm. Going, buddy, I love you. I'm here.
Well, Todd, can I tell you two things that I think right off the bat get in the way of people being willing to step into that? One of them is just, I think, fear and shame of growing up in a culture that says, it doesn't matter why you did it, you just shouldn't have done it, and you should feel ashamed of yourself.
Right.
Well, that's bull crap, because if you don't understand something, how can you effectively take ownership of it? If you don't understand how I got here, then how are you going to know that you're not going to just get there again?
Right.
And so to say, of course, thinking about what you went through in your story, of course, there was the strong likelihood you were going to end up here.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't mean that I'm not taking responsibility.
Right.
Of course doesn't mean you're not responsible.
No.
Of course doesn't mean there's not something that you need to own. And you know, I think we've got to draw that distinction. But the other thing that I think gets in the way of that is, you might have to edit this because my brain just went out for a second. What is the other thing that gets in the way of that?
of us just
being. Oh, yeah. Here it is. So I think the other thing that gets in the way of stepping into this kind of work is part of us knows that if I step into that and I get it in the light, I might have to quit doing the thing that has been my savior and my caregiver, you know? Wow, and yeah. I know it's been a terrible one. I know it's been harming me while it helped me, but it goes back so far that it's been like, it's been my best friend that's also been kicking my tail for 20, 30 years. And what if I have to let go of this? And what if God doesn't come through for me? You know, so there's a lot of shame and there's a lot of fear that gives people more, of course, reasons for not wanting to step into this kind of honest work.
Like, what if God isn't trustworthy enough to fill my longings?
Yeah.
That's a scary proposition. Like, I've, you know, like we've all been able to turn to our behaviors to self-soothe and be like, okay, I'm going to be okay. And what if, like, Lord, how are you going to fill? Man, what do you, because I've worked some with my friend Michael Cusick, and Andy and I met on a men's weekend where we're doing recovery work and talking about story and just trying to, it's literally like you're looking for the signs on the path to go back and trace back the trauma and the stuff that contributed to the brokenness and the unwanted behavior. But I just forgot what I was going to say, Greg. I'll have to get Chandler to edit this. What are we talking about before that?
Well, it seems like you were referring to some of the people who are doing work in this to kind of come to an understanding of our stories and start to do that work. Is that what you were going to ask?
Oh, I know what I was going to ask you. What in your experience, because I know Michael talks about this. He's got a book, Michael Cusick, called Surfing for God. Like the idea is we all really are just longing for God. What in your experience is the antidote in real time for unwanted behavior, whether it's addiction of sexual nature, of alcohol, of church work? Like, what causes our hearts to heal and us to become more alive? What is the disinfectant that brings life? And there's maybe more than one, but what are some of the good things that God's going, but I have this for you?
It's healthy connection.
Yeah, retrain your brain, right?
It's healthy connection. Okay. I mean, that's the answer. And the way that we experience it can be in a thousand different ways, but we were made for connection. You know, we've got a podcast, and you've been on it, called What We Really Want, Conversations About Connection. And the reason it's called What We Really Want is actually from a story in Surfing for God. When Michael was trying to come clean with Larry Crabb, because Michael was, you know, kind of working in an internship under Larry, and he was trying to confess just a little bit of what he was struggling with. And so he said, I'm struggling with lust and fantasy and pornography. And Larry goes, well, Mike, I think if you want, if what you really want is to act out to porn, I think you should do it.
Right.
And Michael's like, okay, you know, what's the punchline? He's like, there's no punchline. If that's what you really want, I think you should do it. And after two or three times, Michael got frustrated and he slammed his hand on the table. He says, that's not what I really want.
Wow.
And Larry goes, oh, okay. And so what do we really want? And sometimes we have no idea how to answer that question.
Bro, that's the biggest question. Like, what do you desire?
It's like Julia Roberts in Runaway Bride, you know, how do you like your eggs?
Yeah.
And she had no clue, you know, she'd just been hitching herself to everybody else because she didn't slow down long enough to understand, you know, and neither do we, what are all the things that are getting in the way of us living the life that we were created for?
Yeah.
And so the antidote is to move in the direction of healthy connection. And the reason we don't is because it requires vulnerability. We could get hurt. My friend Drew Boa, who's got a ministry called Husband Material, he calls that taking a redemptive risk.
Right.
You know, it is a risk, but it offers such redemption in our relationships if it pays off. And we're not going to know whether it does or not until we take it. And so, you know, there's a famous TED Talk. I'm sure you've seen it with Johan Hari, called Everything You Know About Addiction Is Wrong. And it's the one that's got that famous closing line that people have been quoting for years, that the opposite of addiction is not sobriety, it's connection.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because in this 15-minute TED Talk, he spent so much time talking about how the war on drugs that we waged in the 80s and the 90s was taking the wrong tack, because it was vilifying the users. Yeah. And it was pushing them even further into isolation. Yes. And that's what we tend to do. We say, shame on you. You should feel bad about that. Right. Like, make better choices. And we don't consider for a second that people who are making those choices are the ones who most of all would like to stop.
Yeah.
But they're afraid, like, I've done too much already. Nobody's going to accept me. And so then if I stop using, then I'm going to have nothing. Yeah. And so he says, instead of singing war songs, we need to be singing love songs to addicts and saying, come, there's a place for you. Like,
right.
It's not that we don't care what you've done, but we care more about you than about what you've done. Mm-hmm. And we want to be there and walk with you and help you.
Golly. That's just not, you know, I just, as you're talking and we go on this journey together, I wish there was a way, and maybe you can advise our listeners, you know, you got some people that lead on a team. And there's a pastor, and there's an executive pastor, there's a staff. How can we just as a church build the vulnerability piece and safety into the flow, you know? Like,
yeah.
Imagine going, hey, we're gonna acknowledge that we're all addicted to something. Let's just start there, which I love. Mm-hmm. Back to what Carrie Garcia was saying at Freedom Academy, which I love Freedom Academy. We're going to integrate it with Worship Circle next year some, but she showed this video about this rat and this cocaine water or something.
Yeah.
You've seen
that. Yeah, that was in the TED Talk that Johan Hari, Rat Park Experiment. People can Google it.
I was laughing because it was a British guy saying cocaine. I told Carrie, I was like, that's making me die laughing.
That was Johan that she was probably showing from that TED Talk.
He drank the cocaine. I don't know, like my friend Heath always says that and we die laughing. But the point was, for those of you listening, that your vice dies in community.
Mm-hmm.
And
because you're getting what you're looking for through the cocaine, or the porn, or the whatever it is, or the workaholism.
Yeah.
When we're getting what we really want, then the thing that we've been accepting or settling for doesn't seem to do it anymore. And you know, we've got to acknowledge the neuroscience that in the initial phases, like getting your dopamine hit in a healthy way is not going to feel as good as an orgasm.
Yeah.
Like, sorry, but it's just not.
Right.
But our brains are plastic. God created them that way. And neuroplasticity says that over time, if we're moving in the direction that aligns with who we are and our identity, and we're getting our connection needs met in legitimate, healthy ways, our brains and our bodies will heal.
Yeah.
And how long it'll take, the only answer I can give is longer than you want it to, you know, but in some cases quicker than you thought it would take. Yeah. And that's what I want people to realize. There's a lot of things I want people to realize. One of them is this is a battle that is fought on a spiritual plane, but not just on a spiritual plane. It's on a psychological plane, an emotional plane, a physiological plane. Mm-hmm. And if we don't acknowledge that every part of us as a human being is affected by this,
body, soul,
and we're
spirit.
Only trying to like pray the struggle away, then we're not going to get the result that we want because we're not acknowledging everything that has happened.
Mm.
And you don't have to ignore the spiritual to address the psychological, the emotional, and the physiological. They all integrate because we are integrated people. You know, we're complex people and we have to address all of it.
I love that you brought up the brain science because that was new for me. I mean, it's like you've got like neural pathways that have formed over years, you know.
That's right.
Of, you know, trying to fix unwanted behavior, feel something because you're not feeling in other relationships or whatever. And you've compensated and your brain literally has to be rewired and healed.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, when you think about like, how do we feel like, how do we get dopamine?
Yeah.
I mean, we get dopamine when we eat, we get dopamine when we have sex, but we also get dopamine, like you have a dopamine hit when you play the guitar.
Yeah.
And I have a dopamine hit when I go for a run. When you go out and eat guacamole with friends and you are laughing at the table at a Mexican restaurant, you're getting a dopamine hit. And think about somebody who grew up isolating themselves because they were afraid to be known. They have inadvertently robbed themselves of the connected experiences that we were all meant to have.
Mm.
And so they just got them through a very narrow filter of things that were actually unhealthy.
Yeah.
And so now we've got this whole world that opens up to us once somebody knows, and we can start discovering what it is that really gives us life and makes us feel connected to God, to myself, and to the people around me.
Thanks for mentioning those, like just in the neuroscience aspect, the dopamine hit life-giving things. What are some of the things with the community you've been in that are really good steps toward positive dopamine hits in the world? You mean you mentioned some, like me playing guitar, going for a hike.
Yeah.
I like the idea of going, man, here's life. Choose one of these, you know? And
well, and make
connection community huge, right? But also, what are some things that, and that's one of the things Michael was teaching us, like, dude, what brings you, go play, you know?
And make your own list too. I mean, that's, so that's where the intersection of faith and relationships and also a 90-year-old tradition that started with Alcoholics Anonymous in the 1930s comes into play, because that's why we get a sponsor and we work the 12 steps,
right?
Because in doing that, we're learning how to replace a chaotic system that's been running amok in our lives with a system that's going to encourage us to live the way that we were meant to live.
Right.
And one of the things that we do in our community is we encourage men to find a sponsor. And then one of the exercises that we encourage them to do is something that was come up with by a recovery fellowship called SAA, or Sex Addicts Anonymous. It's called the Three Circles Exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And you can Google it, but you basically draw three concentric circles, a big one, and then a smaller one in that, and then a smaller one inside that. And the inner circle, the smallest one on the inside, that's where you write down your behaviors that when I'm doing these, that's me acting out as an addict. Like, right. I cannot do this healthily. So looking at porn, you know, hooking up, or, you know, whatever's on your list, there's no ambiguity. When I'm doing that, I am acting out and I'm behaving as an addict. And then you go out to the middle circle, the one in the middle. These are, if the inner circle is red light behaviors, the middle circle is yellow light. And those are things that, like, I'm not resetting my sobriety when I do this, but often when I do this, I'm checked out, I'm not in a good place.
Mm-hmm.
This often leads to acting out. And that can be like scrolling on social media for 2 hours, or, you know, going to certain places and where I acted out before and just like fantasizing about that. I mean, again, people make out their own list. And then the outer circle, which is the biggest one, these are the green light behaviors. This is what I want more of in my life. Like, let me do as much of this, because this is connected stuff. This can be going to therapy. It can be going to a recovery meeting, meeting with my sponsor, but it can't just be recovery specific things, because we'll get exhausted with that. It's going to eat Mexican or going to see a movie, or,
dude, you know, I love just that.
Hanging out with friends or going to like I took my daughter to Ben Rector and Switchfoot a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
That was an outer circle behavior. That was a connected activity. And so if we're filling our lives with as many connected things as possible, before long, we're going to discover that the needs that we were trying to meet through acting out, whether it's drinking, taking drugs, having sex, gambling,
food addiction,
or overworking, exercise, you know, compulsive exercise, video gaming, we don't need it as much.
Yeah.
We don't need it as much. Now, there are obviously extreme cases where the addiction has gone to a level where you're going to need interventions beyond what I'm talking about. Some people need inpatient treatment. Some people, you know, that's, you're going to say, well, I think that's probably something that I need. I'm just saying that whether or not you discover that more intense interventions are necessary, what I'm describing is something that's going to be helpful for everybody in kind of assessing where you are and identifying where it is that you want to go.
Yeah. I love the question, first of all, for those of you fortunate enough to be watching this on YouTube, because we're trying to get people to watch on YouTube because we do have the video. Side thing, I had Gullahorn on the last podcast. Three quarters of the way through, he picks up an American Girl doll and starts stroking the hair. And I'm like, Andy, I cannot take you seriously. But for those of you that know Andy, so the podcast you guys have is What We Really Want. That's in the thing. So you guys have been doing that, trying to help people for a while. I love the fact, you know, my friend Danny Mullins, my spiritual director, said there's a couple times when Jesus is walking on earth and he asked this question, what do you want?
Hmm.
Like the Son of God came to somebody and said, what do you want?
Yeah.
I remember Ian Cron, when I went to see Michael that weekend, he was there, and he's the first station I came to at the men's intensive, and he reads that passage and says, "What do you want?" And that question was just like, my heart was just, and then my friend Tom, who works with me, said, "Todd," he always ends our sessions with, "What do you need?"
Yeah.
And the outer ring you're talking about is what we really need.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I think that the freedom and the joy and the life comes when we do create these neural pathways, and we're finding this connection in these activities that our bodies are engaged in. They're life-giving, you know. I just love that Jesus gives us a new healing and new paths and new things to enjoy that are connected with people, you know.
I love that too. I mean, when you just said Jesus asked those questions, I remember one time in the Gospels, "What do you want me to do for you?"
Yeah.
And then at the pool of Bethesda, you know, the crippled man, he says, "Do you want to be well?"
Yeah.
And I'm like, God, that's a stupid question. Like, of course he wants to be well, but it's not a stupid question.
That's a huge question.
Because there are so many of us who have crippled our lives with this or that, and yet here's a help that's being offered, and how many of us stay in the mess, right? Because with my brain, I would say, or with my thinking brain, I would say, of course I want to be well.
Right.
And yet I keep myself stuck.
Yeah.
And so Jesus was not asking a rhetorical question to the guy at the pool of Bethesda. Do you want to be well? And then he called him to do something. Mm-hmm. And I think we've got to ask ourselves that same question, or hear that question that the Lord is asking us. It's like, do you want to be well? Well, okay, then let's take a step. Let's move in the direction of where the wellness is going to come from. If you want help, you've got to move toward it.
Yeah. What do you find that people really want?
Well, first, I find that a lot of times people will answer that question by saying, "I don't know." They'll say, "I don't know what I want." And part of the reason for that is because nobody has ever asked them before.
Yeah.
A lot of people that we work with have been just in a system that tells them what they want and what they should do and what they need, and just glorifies compliance. And I'm not saying that obedience to Scripture is not a good thing, because it is, but "because I said so" is a great reason to give to a toddler, but it's not a great reason to give to somebody as they get older. I mean, we need to know why we're doing the things that we're doing,
right,
and we need to know what we're hoping for out of that.
Yeah.
And so oftentimes people don't know what they want. And when we slow the pace down enough to say, you know, "What do you want for yourself?" And they, "Well, I want to quit looking at porn." Okay, that's awesome. If you were able to quit looking at porn, what do you imagine that would give you in your life that you don't have right now? Because what they really want is something a lot better than not looking at porn.
Yeah.
What they really want oftentimes is the answer that comes, "I want peace. I want freedom. I want joy."
Yeah.
And porn is robbing them of peace, freedom, and joy.
Yeah.
And so a lot of, sorry, Todd.
You're fine.
Man, I got crap on cords, so
you're fine,
there's
man.
Some more editing for Chandler to do.
Chandler can.
What people want, we've got to slow the pace down enough to let them know, first off, there is something deeper than on the surface that you're looking for. And let's get down under there and figure out what it is. Let me support you while you discover what it is that your heart most deeply wants, because the thing that your heart wants is not a bad thing.
Yep.
It's a good thing.
Yep.
It's a beautiful desire that people like Michael Cusick say has become a distorted desire.
Yeah.
The desire wasn't bad. The direction that it took was bad. Mm-hmm. And then when they're able to say, "Yeah, peace, joy, freedom, that's what I want."
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, let's let God use this process to help you understand what's been getting in the way of that,
mm-hmm.
so that we can move in a different direction towards the thing that your heart has been asking for.
Yeah. All right, let's end with this, and then I want you to tell people about how they can stay in touch with Awaken and what you guys do. And in addition to that, we'll talk about small group with Worship Circle as being, it's hard to find a safe place, and that's the last question. Mm-hmm. It's like some of the people are listening, you're female struggling with, you know, either sexual addiction, food addiction, whatever, or a male, same thing. We've all got our stuff, but when you're in a community and you're on a church staff, it's like we haven't notoriously been good at churches with leadership fostering vulnerable, safe places to be seen. And I love the line that John Lynch says, what if there was a place so safe that the worst of us could be known and we would find that we'd be loved more and not less in the telling of it? So I'm imagining there's some listeners, they're going to have the whole gamut. Like, you know, I do this from time to time. It's a, it's been the dog nipping at my head. I've never acted out in this way or taken it to, you know, this extent. So it's there, but it's like not ruling me right now, but it's in my life. Then you got people that are like, man, I can't, this is just addictive to me. I can't stop. And it's an all the time thing. It's all I think about. What's a step just to foster a breakout conversation or moment with a church team just to give people, I don't even know kind of what I'm asking, man, because you know, you've dealt with this. It's like, how does a pastor, a lead team, how do you foster the ability to move toward help when you know that everybody's struggling with something, but everybody's afraid, you know, if I do this, I might lose my job, and you might, you know?
Yeah. So one thing that I'll say right off the bat, for people who are in executive leadership in ministries and churches, who you've got to navigate this, because if you find out somebody on your staff team is addicted to sex and porn, you can't do nothing about it, of course. But like, I think that one of the loudest things I'd like to say and hope that it gets through is have a clear path that you know as an organization, this is the path that we're going to follow, and bring that into the conversation during the hiring process. Let people know. And first off, a lot of churches are getting better about asking the porn question, but they're asking it in a yes or no manner. Like, have you ever struggled with porn? And they're like, well, if I want this job, I better say no. But presume that everybody has, right? And instead ask, talk to us about your struggle with pornography or other forms of sexual brokenness. What have you discovered? What have you healed? What have you put in place to protect you? That's a much better question, because it opens up a dialogue. And then if it's a candidate that you're looking at, say, okay, this is our policy. We want you to know that if you struggle occasionally, you can come and bring that to us, and this is what we do. You know, and it's not a promise of amnesty under all circumstances, but what you don't want is for somebody to think that they had safety and then find out later that they didn't. So anticipate and talk about as many things on the front end as you can. And then if you do get into a point where termination of the job is just where it has to go, make sure that you don't drop them like a bad habit. You know, make sure that you keep some kind of care in their lives as they transition. And make sure that you don't withhold relationship from them, because that is what happens most of the time. And so that's, and if church leaders are saying, that sounds great, I need some help in knowing how to form that up, that's actually one of the things that Awaken offers, is we have an offering for ministry leaders called Awaken Ministry Cohorts. And it's a, it's a cohort where you can join it, and over the course of 9 months, it's a half a day meeting once a month over 9 months. And we just talk about all different types of topics related to sexual brokenness, addiction, trauma, recovery, helping people in your churches heal. And we're wide open to doing those virtually, so people from anywhere can express interest, and we'll, you know, let you know when the next cohort is starting. But then for people who are actually in ministry, who are asking that question, I would just say, start by finding one person that you can tell. And that's going to at least get you out of that or that isolation. And it may be that the first person you want to tell is somebody in a confidential anonymous meeting. And if you go to awakenrecovery.com, right on the front page, there's a button that says Awaken Meetings. If you tap on that, you can fill out a quick form letting us know where you live and what you're looking for. And within 24 or 36 hours, we will let you know how you can connect to a meeting. If you live in a place where we have in-person meetings, we'll tell you that. If you don't, we've got virtual meetings every week, and those communities really gel. I mean, I know through Worship Circle, you know how much intimacy and connection there can be even on a screen, you know? And so that's something that right off the bat you can do. I mean, we have intensives and workshops that people can do if that's something that makes sense for them. But yeah, I would just say, to move towards what you really want, you're going to have to find somebody you can talk to about it.
Yeah.
And so if you don't, if you're not sure yet, if that's somebody on your staff team, then start with a recovery meeting and build the capacity. And as soon as possible, you know, bring somebody into that circle of trust. And more than trusting your staff team not to fire you, you know, what if the goal was trust God to take care of you no matter what happens? And I know that sounds like a platitude, and I know it's easier said than done, but I think that if we have support, we can get to the point where that's not just words, it's actually something that we're experiencing.
I love that, man. Well, Greg, thank you so much for your time, for this conversation, and for, I just love the fact we're, as a ministry, talking about this with you guys.
Thank you for having me on, Todd. This has been amazing.
We've, and for those of you worship leaders and pastors listening to this, you know, we've got a new term coming up in 2026. And I would just say, if you're in a spot where you're just like, man, what Greg's talking about, I need that now. Go to awakenrecovery.com or org.
.com.
Check out what they have to offer. Andy and I both believe in Greg and their team and what they do. They've helped a lot of people. And man, the worship circle small group environment, we've had so many terms, bro, where, you know, guys and women can finally get in a safe space where they can have that vulnerability and find that they receive love. And as they're able just to be real in small group through the term, it's a definite massive step toward freedom.
Absolutely. And I'm glad that you said a step towards freedom, because I think that there's this false fantasy of, when I tell somebody, it's like, you know, the finger's going to snap and I've got freedom 100%.
Yeah.
It's a path. I mean, it's not that telling somebody takes away the triggers or takes away the temptations or is going to guarantee that you're never going to fail again. But having a place where you can even take that failure and know that you're going to be loved and accepted is a huge part of it.
Man, I think the thing that, as we close, that blows my mind, and really where I'm at in this season, and some of the story work I've done with Carrie and Adam and my friends, is like, would you go back with Jesus and allow his tears to coincide with yours over what happened to you? And I think That's to me, like, I envision Jesus with us as kids just going, my beloved, I'm so sorry that happened to you. And these tears from the Son of God on your behalf, and the harm and the brokenness and what happened and what you longed for and didn't get. My tears are falling off my face and my beard for you. And would you allow yourself to grieve with me the harm that happened in your story on this earth when Shalom was broken, and start there? Because until we do that, and you know this, Greg, until we find out the origin of this behavior, regardless of what it is, where it's coming from, we're still just doing the mask thing, you know? We're masking up every week to serve.
Yep.
And I just, I know this is your heart too. I feel like we're in a war. It's a spiritual battle, but we want healing and wholeness and wholehearted ministry leaders and sons and daughters to not carry information to people, you know, they'll just tell them that God loves them. He does, but to manifest his presence in a way, because they've paid attention to their own harm and healing, and they're on that journey. And it's going to be a lifelong journey for all of us.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
and it's been, you know, since January of 2009, that I've seen different things.
Yeah.
And I've seen God do healing that before January of 2009, I could never have possibly imagined and definitely wouldn't have believed. And so I just want to acknowledge that for people who are listening, who are like, yeah, but it would be worse with me. It wouldn't work with me. That's what I thought too. And I get that you think that, and nothing that we say in a podcast is going to be able to convince you, but I hope that God will use it just as a nudge to moving in that direction of, well, you know, it's got to be better than what I'm getting now. And if you're sick of being stuck, then what if we tried finding that one person that we could tell our story to, who could help us see God's heart and his compassion for us?
Yeah, great first step. Choose wisely your one person.
That's right.
Because the one person could be the ticket out, or the more shame, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so
that's right.
And you know, the people that are the ones that are going to bring Jesus to you are the ones that have done their work.
And that's right. If you don't know who that one person is yet, then you know, find something like Awaken. It doesn't have to be Awaken, but it or something like it. Yeah. And you can try it out there first, and then you can begin to really look at the relationships you have in your life and just ask God to give you a sense of who are the safe people in my life that I can go to.
Love it. Yeah. Greg Oliver, awakenrecovery.com. Thanks so much, buddy.
And whatwerellywant.show.
whatwerellywant.show. That's the podcast. So, yeah.
Shameless self-promotion.
No, man. It's like anybody doing this work needs to have a connection to people, because you guys are helping a lot of people and you're helping an epidemic problem in the world, but also in the church. We're not immune.
Well, as a former worship leader, I'm filled with gratitude for what you are doing through Worship Circle. And I wish it would have been around when I was doing it, but I'm so glad that it's around now. Thank you, Todd.
Thank you, buddy.
Hey, thanks for joining us on the podcast today. To find out more about Worship Circle, to join a small group, or to register for one of our upcoming events, go to worshipcircle.com.